Hey, listeners, it's your host, Stacia. You know, I was just thinking about it, and everybody wants to rule the world, you know? I mean, except for me. I just want to do this podcast, because it's the best. Did you know that there are Easter eggs for the episodes hidden within these intros? So clever. Anyway, you're about to hear my chat with Jason Vio and Julien Labro about their outsidery instruments, the classical guitar and the bandoneon and accordion. It's a really fun conversation. I think you're going to dig it. And also, if you're in Houston, you can actually go see Jason perform in just a few days here, if it is indeed the beginning of December and you're listening to this in 2016. Decamera of Houston is bringing him to town, and we'll put links on our website to how you can find out more about that performance. Anyway, don't forget to subscribe to, rate us, and review us on iTunes. Because, I mean, all the good reasons. Anyway, enjoy the episode. There's a rumor going around that classical music can be hoity-toity. But here in the classical classroom, we beg to differ.
Beethoven 5.
Isaiah is shaking with excitement.
Oh, I mean, there's just so many great parts of the opera.
He asked me to play his favorite spot in the first movement of the Brahms. And he said, I started using those licks in my guitar solos.
It's how to be classical music rock stars, because there's not enough of that in this business.
Occasionally, I would plug in the mandolin to my distortion pedals.
I don't change my voice.
And talking to classical music voice.
I'm playing classical music now. I mean, it's the same 12 notes. That's what's so cool about it.
I'm Daisha Clay, a classical music newbie, and I'm trying to learn all I can about the music. Come learn with me and the classical music experts I invite into the Classical Classroom. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Classical Classroom. I'm Daisha Clay, and joining us from the studios of WCLV in Cleveland are Jason Vio and Julien Labro. Guys, welcome to the Classical Classroom.
Thank you, Daisha. It's great to be here.
Thanks for having us.
So it's interesting. I believe we've had only one other classical guitarist on this show, but for good measure, we had her on twice. So before we start, Jason, I'd love it if you could tell us a little bit about the classical guitar's role in the classical music world, because I know it's kind of a unique instrument there. And then, Julien, I'd love to hear your take on your instruments, the bandoneon and the accordion.
Well, Daisha, the classical guitar, through its ancestry, if you will, has a roughly 500-year repertoire dating all the way back to the Renaissance era. So we have sort of our own repertoire, but in particular for the classical guitar itself, once it came into its own by the early 19th century, you know, you had Fernando Sor and Mauro Giuliani and Paganini even writing lots of music for the guitar. In fact, all of Paganini's chamber music was written with the guitar rather than the piano as the harmony instrument. But, you know, it doesn't have, of course, the breadth of repertoire that the strings and piano have. Mm-hmm. So I feel like our role is to try to expand the repertoire in the 21st century. This is a big part of the phase, I guess, I'm currently working in. You know, just premiered a concerto with Dan Visconti and a violin guitar piece by Vivian Fung. I just premiered a string quartet by Avner Dorman. Jeff Beal, the House of Cards composer, just premiered actually a couple nights ago his concerto for guitar with Edmonton Symphony. So, I mean, this is the investment I think that a classical guitarist has the opportunity to do. And of course, should be working in.
So I know Valerie Hartzell, the other guitarist that we've had on the show, she talked a lot about the fact that classical guitar kind of went by the wayside when symphony orchestras came to the fore, when we kind of moved from a chamber music period to a larger halls and things like that, because the guitar just didn't have the same
projection. Right.
Yeah, right.
That's true. Yeah, I think there's definitely some truth in that, because as things moved out of the parlor, you know, like we had an opportunity there with Schubert, you know, but by that time already the symphony orchestra was becoming like a big medium for expression for the major, if you will, composer like Schubert or Beethoven. That became kind of their mode of expression. And subsequent composers felt almost like they were in the shadow of Beethoven, and they had to make a statement with their symphonies in order to, you know, to sort of make their mark. And that's a very much a 19th century ideal. But I think we're getting back, though, for various reasons, which we won't get into. But we're getting back to the smaller group. I think, you know, the chamber music is a very thriving thing. Throughout, with so many festivals now, and even house concerts and private concerts, but things at nightclubs as well, where classical music can be enjoyed, and things are kind of loosening up again.
Yeah,
which I think is a good thing for that.
Well, and Julian, I'd love to hear your tip because your instrument is really unique. I know basically nothing about it, so tell me about your instrument and its role in the classical music world, or instruments, I should say.
The accordion is relatively new as far as instruments. If you look at, for example, compared to the piano or the guitar or the cello, the violin. So due to that reason, unfortunately, not much of repertoire back in the heyday of classical music. A lot of music wasn't written with the accordion in mind because it just wasn't around. Mm-hmm. And primarily when the accordion was first came to life, so we're talking, you know, about 1850, mm-hmm. it went into popular music rather than the concert halls.
Yeah.
So it's been a challenge for it to come to the forefront of being in front of a symphony orchestra and being part of chamber music. Now, moving forward, in the last 50 years, a lot of composers have been writing a lot of music for it, mm-hmm. and that are, you know, part of definitely the classical and modern classical landscape of music.
Yeah.
Jason mentioned Avner Dorman. Avner has written pieces with the accordion in mind, with symphony as part of it. So there's a lot of composers like that are now featuring the accordion at the forefront. Certainly one composer that we should not forget, and that primarily made the accordion and the bandoneon to where it's at, bring it to the concert stage, is the Argentinian composer Astor Piazzolla.
Oh, yeah.
He did so much for it. He studied first with Ginastera and then went on to study with Nadia Boulanger, and was really someone that was inspired by classical music, mm-hmm. and the Stravinsky, Beethoven, mm-hmm. Bach, and was really, while he was a bandoneon player, he had the vision of putting that instrument in front of an orchestra. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So that led to many pieces that he has written, you know, concertos and that sort of thing. So in a way, we owe him a lot to popularize the accordion and the bandoneon, you know, in front of an audience in a concert hall setting.
Yeah. Well, and this kind of is a great segue into y'all's new, y'all, I sound like such a Texan, into your new CD, which is called Infusion, where you've got a lot of arrangements. You've got some original pieces as well, but I'd love to focus on the arrangements if we could, because This is something that happens a lot with classical guitar and with the bandoneon and accordion, is that like you take pieces that already exist and you arrange them for your instruments. So I would love to hear an example from the new CD of a piece that you arranged, and just if you could kind of talk to me about how you did that.
Should we start with the Squalo?
Yeah, sure.
Squalo by Piazzolla, since we kind of
Oh yeah.
We're just talking about him, yeah.
That sounds good. So, Julian, here, are we hearing the bandoneon or the accordion?
That's the bandoneon, okay. Yes. And that's an introduction to the actual piece that we're going to hear, Squalo, which means shark. So
okay.
This is a little a prelude, if you would.
Okay.
You'll hear the rhythm starts and we into the tune. Thank you. So this features a candombe rhythm from Uruguay. That's what the rhythm is.
Right, and this is where we start kind of messing around with it a little bit, because I obviously I'm playing a kind of a guitar figure that is probably a little bit closer to 70s kind of R&B and disco than Argentina. But the thing is, I mean, in so much of the world, this music, the Escualo is a very, you know, well-known Piazzolla track. And and so a lot of what we're doing, I mean, Escualo ends up in our, sort of in our arrangement becoming like an 8 or 9 minute thing.
It's like a rhapsody.
Yeah, like a rhapsody, exactly. And yeah. Julian had the idea of stirring, like he noticed that the the melody of Escualo, the tune, sounded a lot like the guitar riff, the kind of the underlying guitar riff in Bob Marley's You Could Be Loved.
Oh, yeah.
So for the folks listening, if you are to, you know, check this CD out, you'll have to wait for it a little bit, like, you know, a few minutes, but because we're going to play the Escualo tune. But then it sort of morphs into that. It sort of, you sort of realize that we start, that we're actually like playing Could You Be Loved. And then we're doing a lot of stuff in and around that with improvising. And I mean, it's just a very,
sorry to interrupt you. I just,
there it is. We kind of let our subconscious, I think, take over in the rehearsals, and because we kind of do that anyway when we're rehearsing. But this time we almost like we were working it out, and we just ran with it, and then we committed it to tape. Basically, we kind of just took the next step, and we tried not to analyze it, actually. So
okay. So you basically got like, when you go into the studio, when you sit down to play together, you've got like a sort of rough draft of this arrangement, and then you sort of improvise off of that. Is that how it
kinda works? Correct. On this one track, we had like a skeleton of what was going to happen. Yeah. Like basically, okay, here's the intro bandoneon, and then we're going to get into the tune, and eventually let's open things up with like this little quote of Bob Marley and see where we can take it from there. And, you know, we always, you know, Jason, while he's really well known as a classical musician, he has a lot of chops in several areas musically, like when it comes to all different styles. Mm-hmm. And so what's fun about working with someone like that is just like, it's kind of limitless, because you don't necessarily think, oh, you know, I should keep it a certain way or whatever, you know. Anything is game. So which opens up a lot of possibilities sonically and stylistically. Yeah. And so when you hear that at some point when the arrangement opens up, I mean, Jason throws in a lot of improv stuff, you know, maybe some references you'll hear, guitar fans of definitely some Pat Metheny influence and people like that in there. And then when Jason is done soloing, if you would, then he passes it on to me, and then it's almost like a jazz setting, you know. We took turns at solos and then eventually meet at the end of the form that we've established, and then take the tune out to a coda.
Right.
Talk to me about why you chose to arrange Tears for Fears, Everybody Wants to Rule the World.
I remember exactly why. We were playing one of our very first concerts together years ago. I mean, this had been 5 years ago in Boston.
Well, it was simple to remember because It was during the debates of 4 years ago.
Uh-huh. Right, the presidential debates.
Election time.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's right. And it was, we were playing in Boston area. And I had actually brought a squalo and thinking that this was going to be our encore. And Julian was like, nah, he's like, you know, this is very typical of our sort of our working relationship. He's like, nah, we should do like a pop song. Pop song from the 80s. And so I went to, we rehearsed our program and I said, okay, I'll think of something. And I went to the hotel room and the debates were on once we finished rehearsal. Uh-huh. I'm sitting in the hotel room and I kind of thought like, everybody wants to rule the world, you know, uh-huh. type of thing. It's sort of... Even though not everybody wants to rule the world technically, but the, you know, it just sort of popped into my head, and then I pulled out my guitar and I just started playing the backing track or as much of it as I could with the bass and the kind of that rolling 3-beat-over-2 subdivision guitar line that's such a signature of that song. And then just kind of, you know, played the form of the song through. And then the next morning, I found a lead sheet or something online, handed it to Julian, and that was it. And we played it as our encore that night.
And we played, actually, the first time we played it through was a live on a radio station.
Oh, my God, that's right.
Really?
We did it for Kathy Fuller on WGBH. That was terrifying because we hadn't actually played it.
And Julian, is that bandoneon or accordion?
This one, it's an accordina. It's a third instrument.
I'm interested in the fact that, so the classical guitar and the bandoneon / accordion / all the instruments that Julian plays are sort of like these singular instruments in the classical music world, in that they are making inroads into that world, but it's still kind of like in progress. Like you guys are both kind of pushing that forward in your own ways. Is that why you came together, or are these instruments just well suited together naturally?
Well, I was an admirer of Julian's playing in the Detroit Hot Club of Detroit when he came to Cleveland. He would come to Cleveland and play at Nighttown, and my producer Alan Bice of Azika Records and I would check them out whenever I was in town, and so we would just hang out at the bar afterwards with the band, and I just asked them, I said, do you play any bandoneon? Because there's an original concerto by Piazzolla for bandoneon and guitar.
A double concerto, yeah.
A double concerto. And so that's kind of how it started, and I somehow found a way to arrange some concert in Cleveland where we played it.
You know? Yeah. So someone invited us, like, knowing that we were going to get together, just gave us a platform to perform for the first time together. And I think after that, we kind of, like, we understood there is such a mutual respect and mutual admiration. Because, we run across a lot of instrumentalists in all of our worlds, but what's interesting is it's hard to find versatility within one genre. Usually someone is really good at one niche, and then it's hard to, if you're not in that vein, it's going to be hard to go out of it. Mm-hmm. But with Jason, I think, like I mentioned earlier, it's like what's great is like we could be talking 1 minute about the Beatles and the next minute about
Tribe Called Quest or something.
Yeah, or Goodbye Delina. Yeah. You know, it's like it's as our range of conversation musically it's very wide. And I think that's interesting because once we had that platform to perform for the first time together, we realized we just looked at each other and be like, hey, man, this is simple to put together. Let's just do some more. Let's
do some more stuff. And that became our first album, the All Piazzolla record.
This is great. Like, I love it when, as a person who's come to classical music as a novice, and I always ask these questions like that where it's like, so technically do these instruments go together? And like, why did you guys make this decision? And inevitably it's always like, it was fun. So we
we don't care. I mean, that's the thing. We're not worried about it.
That's really cool. Yeah. Well, you guys, unfortunately we are out of time. So Jason Vio and Julian Lobro, thank you so much for being on the Classical Classroom today.
Thank you.
Thanks really nice to talk to you guys.
Yes.
All right. Likewise. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, everybody, that does it for this episode of Classical Classroom. By the way, if you happen to be in Houston and you would like to see Jason Vio on guitar, it's your lucky day. Or rather, December 9th will be your lucky day because Da Camera of Houston will be bringing him to town. For more information, go to their website, Da Camera of Houston. I actually don't know what their website is, but I bet you can Google it. Anyway, for more Classroom, go to HoustonPublicMedia.org/classroom. Find our social media there and follow it like the map to fun town that it is. Email me at dclay@HoustonPublicMedia.org. Subscribe to, rate us, and review us on iTunes because it makes you feel all warm and fuzzy when you do. Thanks today to audio producer Todd Tablature-Hulslander for strumming the mixing board. Thanks to editor Mark DiClaudio for his piercing John Lydon eyes. Thanks to Jason Vio and Julian Lobro for being here today. Thanks to engineer Randy Travis. Thanks to engineer Randy Davis at WCLV for his assistance today. Thanks to me for saying words, but most of all, thanks to you for listening. We'll catch you next time.